How's the form, guys? Episode 6 of The Ditch in collaboration with Red Wolf. I'm joined by the two senior hurlers, Roman Shortall on my right, Paulie Doyle on my left. This episode is being brought to you by Irish Institutional Property, who are in hysterics this week that Sinn Féin are going to kill the rental sector down south. We're going to be talking about that a wee bit later on. We're also going to be talking about Simon Harris and how people of his generation are apparently more familiar with Berlin, Paris, and London than they are with places over the border. We're going to be talking a little bit about the Fianna Fáil Ardèche and how Micheál Lehane's coverage in particular and it suggested that he wants nothing more than to just give all of the Fianna Fáil front bench a little kiss. And we're going to be talking a little bit about who Ireland is run for. First off, we're going to talk a little bit about Simon Harris, who this week, he said that, now he did say this was a bad thing, but he said that people of his generation, that was the term that he used, his generation are more familiar with Berlin, Paris, and London, etc., etc., than they are with places over the border. Paulie, you personally, are you more familiar with Newry or Paris?
Paris, without the doubt, you know. Yeah, look, I think that the comments were, you know, not great, but you know, to play devil's advocate for just a moment, right?
Okay, I've heard a lot of devil's advocate, but yeah, okay, so give me some more. Yeah.
I mean, like, he is saying that he's acknowledging that partition worked, right? And that there is a feeling in some pockets of the country that, you know, people in the north are complete outsiders, right? I think he articulated it in a very stupid way, right? But, I mean, I remember last year there was, for example, there was a writers' festival in Kerry, I think last August.
And there were people,
there were people complaining that there were like too many Northerners being brought down and, you know, this is our country, this kind of thing. Similarly, you know, now that The Late Late has a new host, there's been people kind of complaining in some corners of the media or online that maybe, you know, there's too much of an emphasis. Like, what are all these Northerners doing down here all of a sudden talking about their country? So, you know, to that limited extent, I sympathise with what Simon Harris said. I can't believe I just said that.
But I mean, you know, to say you're more familiar, I mean, I ended up, for my sins, I joined into fucking News Talk lunchtime discussion about it. And
we've started a disciplinary process.
Yeah, I'm entering an accountability process. But like, you know that guy, Barry White?
Yes.
He brings shame to that name. Like, he, you know, who's from, like myself, he's from a border community. And I was absolutely amazed at the acrobatics and gymnastics that he and the host were going through to go, no, actually, Simon Harris is actually a great man and we should all give him a little kiss. Like, you know, and your man, like Barry White, he was talking about how, you know, I was kind of trying to talk a wee bit about how, yeah, this way of thinking, this form of thinking, it was central to the British colonial project. There's no reason why we have to embrace that kind of thinking, though. And Barry White would go, oh, well, I went to college in Galway and I met a man who'd never been up north before. It was this painfully kind of like literalist reading of what he said where, you know, I mean, I have been to New Orleans 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever been to Carlow or Wexford, not for a full day anyway. But like, I'm more familiar with both. Like, if I met someone from Carlow, I wouldn't be like,
who
the fuck are you and where the fuck are you from? Like, you know? Yeah. You know, equally, this stuff about the terms in which there's almost like a kind of a level of, I don't know what you'd call it, like quasi-mysticism when people talk about communities from different sides of the borders where, like, look, from Donegal, there are social and cultural differences between, say, people who go to a Donegal match in Balbuffet in McCool Park, and people who go to Leinster matches in the RDS, or the Aviva, if it's a big game. But like, we all accept that these people comprise a whole.
Yeah.
Despite these.
I think another aspect of this is that, you know, Fine Gael and Simon Harris, he's on record as saying that, you know, reunification would be a nice thing, but it's not a priority. So I think it's in his political interest to understate the level of integration between north and south of the country, because he can just in some way kind of kick the can down the road and say, well, we can't have a serious discussion about this because we're still getting to know each other, you know, as if the two the two jurisdictions don't already know each other intimately.
Have you become a Simon Harris fan like Paulie then and agree with everything he said and want to give him a little kiss?
Not quite. I still don't really know, like, you know, do we need to kind of like deeply analyze what he said? Maybe that is the case, like, for, I don't know if it's the case for his generation, which is our generation, like, maybe it's the case for a younger generation. I don't know, but like, I mean,
do you think it's his, like, generation was his word?
Yeah.
Do you think, I mean, I've seen other people make the point, would a better word have been milieu or class?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely that kind of, if we want to kind of accept that, you know, it was what he was saying was just the typical kind of free state, I'm all right, Jack, attitude, like, that we've seen over the decades, then yeah, that's I think that's always been a class-based discussion. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's always been, that sort of attitude has always been associated, I think, with the middle class.
Yeah. And then, yeah, as I said, you know, part of all this then was, you know, he spoke to reporters the following day and he was, you know, very irritated at the reaction to it. It was kind of painted then as a thing of, oh, this is just Sinn Féin and dirty Republicans and nationalists getting up on their high horse. There was a kind of a circle in the wagons as far as the establishment went. Something that you've picked out this week has been some of the coverage about Fianna Fáil's Ardèche, your favourite pieces. Do you want to talk us through what was Micheál Lehane's main take from the Fianna Fáil Ardèche?
That he wants to go on a date with Tara O'Brien, I think.
Or Michael McGrath.
Yeah. Fucking bizarre piece, like, just like an extreme form of fawning over Fianna Fáil and what was being said at the Ardèche, like, very little kind of basis in reality.
But this is going to be actually, we're going to come back to this, or we're going to use this kind of way of looking at things for quite a lot of what we're talking about this week, about, you know, why would the media do, like, you know, Micheál Lehane opened up his piece where he talked about Michael McGrath and Michael McGrath's Isle fella and the pension that he was in.
Invalidity pension, yeah. That has kept the family going, you know, for the last 10 years of Michael McGrath's father's life, I think.
Yeah.
Which, like, that's fine. I'm sure it's true.
Yeah, yeah. But see, this is the thing, right, where, you know, yes, Michael McGrath is going to say something like that. He's a politician and he's addressing his party and he's going to say some stuff like this. And yeah, it's true, possibly true for him. I mean, I personally would quibble, oh, like, if you believe in state support for the elderly, the vulnerable, I think joining Fianna Fáil is probably the wrong way to advance those causes. But of course, he's going to go and say that stuff. Why does someone like Micheál Lehane see fit to not only include this in his coverage, but to go, I need to open my analysis of the Fianna Fáil Ardèche with this personal anecdote of the finance minister?
I suppose he sees that as his job, whereas, you know, he could I think, like, someone who was analysing what Michael McGrath said and analysing it, like, properly as a journalist should, would say, right, okay, you've said this, but then, like, why hasn't child benefit increased for nearly a decade? Do you know what I mean? Like, how do you match?
Why did government try to do what they did with the care referendum, which is, you know, a related issue? Why did they suppress the Attorney General's advice? Why did they try to get that amendment over the line that kind of people like Michael McGrath's father?
Exactly. It's just kind of like a lack of willingness to kind of interrogate what these kind of stories and how they actually match up with these politicians' policies. Like, there's just no willingness to do that. There was other stuff in the piece as well, like about
Darragh O'Brien, you know, typically assured.
Like, it's kind of like we talk about, like, you know, I don't want to go off on a tangent, but like we talk about, like, you know, Putin's propaganda and stuff like that. And then you're just looking at something like that and you're wondering, like, you know, it's quite similar. Like, some of this stuff that we see, like, from people in RT is not dissimilar to what you see in other countries.
Like, he did, in his defense, he's like, he said after Darragh O'Brien said something about, Fianna Fáil's goal for housing delivery is it 50 or 60,000? And, you know, he said that Darragh O'Brien delivered this in his typically assured fashion, you know. And, you know, this is paragraphs down, like, you know, where then he goes, you know, and though it may be assured, others may point to record levels of homelessness.
Like, but so not, but like, not me.
Caveat. Yeah, not me. Other people who aren't nearly as serious and sensible as I am. Yeah.
There's like... But it's part of the culture in RTE to a great extent, and also in some other media outlets. Like, they would say, their argument for this kind of coverage would be, well, we're just reporting on what was said. It's the same thing with if they get, say, like some sort of a press release from the government. They don't see it as actually their role to in any way interrogate it. No. They would argue, we're just reporting on what was said. But the difficulty that I have with that is that that's actually not applied across the board. You can be guaranteed that if they're covering, say, a Sinn Féin Ardesh or something like that, you're not going to just get people reporting on what was said. They're going to be interrogating it to a much greater extent.
I can give you a good example of that. A story that was written by Micheál Lehane that we had to email RTE over because it was full of inaccuracies.
Yeah.
He had just taken a statement from Leo Varadkar in relation to the donation stories that we ran, and had just put it out. The story was riddled with inaccuracies, and we actually emailed RTE and said, like, this is completely wrong. Like, this is, you know, spelled it out to them, and I think within an hour they had fixed the story. Yeah, so, like, it's like just an unwillingness to, as you said, like, even to interrogate, like, a press release.
Is this true?
Like,
this is the same thing, though, with the Temple Street story and the subsequent coverage from RTE. They kind of uncritically ran whatever press release or a statement the HSE had run, you know, to the extent that Fergal Bowers was actually like a bolt from the blue. This story came from nowhere, you know.
And now that, you know, people's roles and the purpose they serve, what's the point of Fianna Fáil?
I keep
hearing about these guys.
Decency.
Yeah, decency. Yeah. Rising to challenges, other buzz phrases like that. It's a difficult one to answer because I, like, hand on heart, I don't believe that Fianna Fáil actually know the answer to that question. Like, if you think about, you know, if you're Micheál Martin.
It's more vibes based, actually. Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil?
Fianna Fáil is almost entirely vibes now. I suppose if you're Micheál Martin, the point of Fianna Fáil is to make sure that you get a pension and to potentially secure a job for yourself in Europe after your career in politics.
He's had that party in an absolute chokehold as well.
Yeah, but I was going to say that, like, if you think about, say, their political rivals, Fine Gael and Sinn Féin, it's quite clear what vision they have, both of those parties have for the country. Fine Gael wants, like, a kind of a deeply socially stratified society in which, you know, there's kind of owners, rich people, landlords kind of have most of the wealth and everyone else should be grateful to kind of have their crumbs. That's their clear vision. You can take it or leave it. Sinn Féin, though there's been some kind of mixed messaging, I think it's relatively clear the kind of country that they want. They want a form of class conciliation. You know, they want a nicer, cozier relationship between people like landlords and tenants, bosses and workers, and they want to reunite the country on the terms of American capitalism. You can take that or leave it. Fianna Fáil, however, it's all just kind of, as you said, vibes. It's just like, we're going to rise to challenges. We're going to get things done. There's no real vision.
We used to be woke, but now we're not woke.
Or as Micheál Laham's calling it, their sales pitch.
Yeah. There's nothing, and I think that they're really fucked when Micheál Martin steps down.
Really?
Well, who do they have? Who's the face of the party?
Some other arsehole.
But he's got, to stick with that language though, he's got such strong brand recognition. Yeah, I mean, in spite of every, you know, terrible political decision that he's made and, you know, all of the actions that have negatively impacted people in this country, there's still a widespread perception that he is essentially a decent guy who means well. Like, when you lose him, that's not necessarily going to be what people think about the next person at the helm.
There's no other decent men in Fianna Fáil.
I'm saying that the next leader mightn't be perceived as such to such a great extent.
Is this latest incarnation of the attempted rehabilitation of Bertie Ahern, how's it going to go?
Hopefully the same as last time.
He's calling for a June election. And he was there, like, again, to go back to, like,
who gives a fuck what he was calling for? Like, it's just fuck. That's my general take on it. Like, I don't have much more to say on it other than I don't give a fuck what Bertie Ahern has to say. Like, I don't understand why anybody else should.
But this is the thing, like, where, you know, again, what's the job of the media? You know? And, you know, Bertie Ahern picked up a couple headlines because, you know, I just struggle with, you know, so reporters are there at the R-dash and then they see Bertie Ahern and they go, oh, I better go ask Bertie Ahern a few questions because he's a totally normal person with a normal record. Like, that seems like a normal thing for me to do right now.
He seems to be turning into the Groundhog and Groundhog Day. I think his name is like Puxatawny Phil or something like that, where he just pops his head up and, you know, decides whether or not I think the weather is going to be good or bad in spring or when spring is going to come or something like that. It's kind of like Bertie Ahern, like, just pops his head up and he says, like, we should have an election in June, and like the media is just like, oh, well, like, Bertie Ahern said we should have an election in
June. He's an elder statesman, don't you know?
Whereas, like, honestly, I think most people, I could be wrong, but I think most people, certainly most people that I have spoken to, would just be like, who gives a fuck what Bertie said? Like, nobody cares what he thinks about stuff like this.
Do you think this is the one, it's like, when you talk about Bertie Ahern, depending on who you are, if you're in the mainstream press, you're just going to address him as if he's, as I said, a normal person.
Yeah.
But others, when Bertie Ahern is brought up and when he's referred to, people will jump to the findings of the tribunals against him.
Yeah.
The terms in which he left Fianna Fáil, and then also the big attack line. And this happens, you know, across the political spectrum, I suppose, is that he's probably the man most associated with crashing the economy, wrecking the country, whatever. Do you think he should be associated with that?
Three words on. We all partied.
We did all party.
I mean, there was you know, minor qualification, I suppose you could say, is that there was a global financial crisis, and whoever was in charge probably would have been in a spot of bother because of everything that was happening globally. But without question, Fianna Fáil, under his leadership, you know, oversaw a country in which banks, financial institutions, you know, property developers, all behaved like in an absolutely reckless, you know, way in terms of the risks that they were taking, the money that was being lent out to people who had no means to repay it. I mean, I recall during the Celtic Tiger, for example, there were ads from banks, I think it was Bank of Ireland, possibly AIB, and you might remember this, encouraging people to actually lie in order to get a loan from the bank.
Yeah.
Like that was, this was all promoted by the government. I mean,
the bank, because this person would go in and they would go, and they were, I think it was actually for, it was for student, it was for student credit cards actually, wasn't it?
And they were like, oh yeah, I need braces or.
Braces, ching ching.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that was all encouraged.
And the guy sitting opposite them would just go, it's fine.
I remember being approached for like, to sign up for credit cards when I was like 16 in school.
Yeah,
that was all
happening on the one hand, and then you did have people saying, "There's a property bubble. Like everything is not as it seems. All of this is going to come crashing down." What did Bertie Ahern do? He said those people should. I mean, if they're that depressed, they should probably fucking kill themselves. So there's what no question that his decisions, you know, because he was in charge, the decisions of his government, of which it should be noted, Micheál Martin was a senior member, were responsible for the economic hardship and, that we face as a
and
country.
And some people,
no question about that.
Some people did kill themselves. Like,
yeah.
Some people who were affected by the crash, like, did. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, those were the consequences of those reckless policies that Bertie Ahern oversaw, you know?
So you think it's fair to associate him
personally
with the...
Well, if it's fair, if we're supposed to associate him with the positives like the peace process, then fucking sure we should associate him with the findings of the tribunal and, you know, all
tribunals
the other stuff.
I'm good with. I kind of like I'm all right. I'm all right, but as far as crashing the economy and stuff goes, I mean. It grates with me a little bit when they don't do it as much anymore, but when Fine Gael figures before this kind of chilling in the, or, you know, the kind of the stopping of hostilities between the two parties, before that, when you'd have, you know, very, very serious, very sensible Fine Gael figure in a debate or responding to something Fianna Fáil would say, they go, "Oh well, you're the crowd who wrecked this, you know, who wrecked this country." It's just like, nah, they were just the guys in government. And when you see like, this is like the nicest thing I can say about Fianna Fáil is that I don't particularly blame them for the actual crash. I think to paint in relatively broad strokes, you look at that period and you look Ireland, Britain, the US, most of the West, you had governments that were relatively big spenders, certainly not keen on any kind of financial regulation, who did let the finance industry run absolute riot, and they were all caught. I mean, what I would say is that Ireland's response to the crash and just that decision to, oh, you know what, not only are we going to bail out our banks primarily for the benefit of British and European banks, we're going to do it on terrible, terrible terms for the Irish people because, you know, we're good Europeans, you know. That's what I would hold against Fianna Fáil, not necessarily the crash itself. Equally then, to go back to the very serious, very sensible Fine Gael characters who, again, when they would have taken part in debates, when they would have absolutely gone after Fianna Fáil for their actions and policies and behaviours in the pre-crash era, when Fine Gael figures would speak about how they were the ones who saved the country and got it back on track, I was like, nah, they just enacted a brutal austerity program, which was actually a wealth transfer. It was an ideological wealth transfer.
They saved the country and then they sold it off.
Yeah, yeah, basically, yeah.
Vincent Brown wrote a piece for the Irish Times a couple of years ago, a really good one as well, in which he pointed out that when Fine Gael were in opposition during the good years, right, one of their main gripes with the government was that they weren't spending enough, that they weren't being reckless enough, that there was too much regulation, right? So this idea that, I mean, whatever about them saving the country, this idea that they would have done anything different is, I mean, just doesn't really hold up at all. But thanks to them for saving the country nonetheless. I appreciate it, you know.
Kind of sticking in a relatively similar theme, and as you're saying, they're selling the country off.
Saving the country.
There's an article in the Irish Times this week. There was a property industry meeting in Croke Park, which was moderated by Ivan Yates. Love that guy. And there was an Irish Times reporter there, Colin Gleeson. And he didn't write the headline, but the Irish Times headline was Sinn Féin policies would kill private rental sector.
Oh, no.
It was only when you kind of read through, it was in the second or third paragraph maybe, that, you know, we're going, it did say industry group says this, you know, and then you kind of read through and you go, all right, well, who is this industry group? And it's like Irish Institutional Property.
And Sherry Fitzgerald as well, wasn't it?
Sherry Fitzgerald's managing director took part as well. Yeah, she had some stuff to say. She said that Sinn Féin policies would cause an exodus of young people from the country. Why does, to take the Irish Institutional Property Group, which is headed up by a guy called Pat Farrell, who is former General Secretary of Fianna Fáil, former head of the Bankers Federation in that pre-crash period as well.
So he's a decent man.
What a CV.
Yeah. He's got some other stuff on the CV as well where you're just going, oh yeah, I know this guy. Like it paints a nice little picture, you know. But he was the guy, you know, he gets up and Ivan Yates gives him his soapbox and he says something a lot. Ivan Yates asks him, what would a Sinn Féin government in the morning mean for the industry? And Pat Farrell says, it would kill the private rental sector. To be clear, Irish Institutional Property, this is a lobby group for, colloquially, you know, what we would call vulture and cuckoo funds, or...
You're not allowed to call them that, though.
Yeah, apparently they don't like that.
We might get a letter now.
Sensitive boys, like... Or, you know, to speak more neutrally, you know, institutional investors with foreign backing. You go onto their website, by the way, and, you know, on the one hand, you had Pat Farrell in Croke Park, you know, playing, oh, please think of us, please just think of the private rental sector here, you know, and oh God, it would absolutely kill us. This would kill us. You go onto their website, and they boast about how their members have 20 billion euro in property under management. So they're not the schmole beans that the...
Yeah, it was like the main takeaway that I got from that report is that people who are involved in, you know, institutional landlordism and the kind of financialization of housing more broadly don't actually realize the extent to which the public despises them. It was a bit like, you know, in The Simpsons when Mr. Burns is on the bus and Barney is like, aren't you that guy that everybody hates? And he goes, oh no, heavens no, I'm Monty Burns, right? Right. So, and I think that was shown when, you know, the head of Sherry Fitzgerald, whose name escapes me at the moment, was saying, we need an awareness campaign here. We need to let the public know what the consequences of having rent caps are going to be. You know, it's like, please, I would fucking love that. You know,
for context, well, at least how the Irish Times reported it, they didn't refer specifically to the Sinn Féin policies that would cause this assassination of the private rental sector. I'm presuming that what they were referring to would be an eviction ban and 3-year rent caps, I believe.
It's free advertising for Sinn Féin, if nothing else. I would have thought that people who are this senior and this, you know, involved in housing would have to cop on to realise that actually this is going to make this is going to make the people that we're criticising look very good. But then again, actually, I guess they don't realise the extent to which people have contempt for them and want to get rid of them, like.
Irish Times have form with, I mean, what would you call it? Would you call it Ireland's foremost pro-landlord publication. Like, they... Remember they have that piece?
I'd say the Business Post could be competing now for
the failing,
the failing Business Post. remember the Irish Times had that piece a while ago where they were talking to, it was anonymous landlords, and they were asking them for their tales of woe, and there was one anonymous landlord who had said that they had this tenant who was overholding and couldn't get the tenant out, and but you know what, they just went and spoke to their local Garda, who then gave him a number, just gave him a number, and called up this person, this number, this person on this number, effectively, I mean, what would you call it, like a mercenary, I suppose, who then had the tenant out, you know, like that. Irish Times publishes this in a big, you know, it was thousands upon thousands of words, as I remember, just of letter after letter of landlord. And it was only when there was a bit of uproar on Twitter where people were going, this is illegal as fuck. Like, what are you doing? They very quietly just went, oh, yeah, you're right, actually. I'll just get rid of that, you know? Now, the Irish Times has generally, when it does go to bat for landlords, it's generally for the mom and pop landlords, the accidental landlords. People are just, you know, happen to find themselves with this extra property, you know. That's their kind of bread and butter. This was more the piece and the way it was presented, you know. It was Sinn Féin housing policies will kill the private rental sector. And as I said, you have to read through to see, oh, so this is Irish Institutional Property. Oh, this is Pat Farrell. Oh, he's a former General Secretary of Fianna Fáil. How does that happen? Just on a very base level, from the reporter to the sub-editors to the editor, how?
I suppose, it's just to reel people in, on the story. It's a bit like the Micheál Lahan stuff. It's just like that there's a sense that this is my job. Do you know what I mean? These are the people that I, you know, I believe in this system that we have. So these are the people that, that I'm going to kind of put their views out there. Do you know what I mean? I just think it's part of that kind of ecosystem. You represent these people. You say this. I'm just going to write a story about what you've said. And I'm going to use this headline, and that's my job, you know.
Do you think that institutional investors should be scared of a Sinn Féin government?
No.
Really no?
No, I don't think so. Not in the short term.
Do you not think it's a good thing that Pat Farrell seems to be scared, at least now?
Yeah, I think it is a good thing, but I just don't know. I'm just not convinced that it is going to be something they should be scared of. Certainly not in the short term. I just don't see. I hope I'm wrong. But I just don't see Sinn Féin kind of doing something straight away that would kind of affect them. Do you know what I mean?
There doesn't seem to be. There's no proposal there to say just ban these faceless piles of money from buying 300-400 houses at a time. And there was a piece in the Journal a couple of years ago, shortly after, I think, people in Berlin, they had some sort of a vote in which they decided we're going to basically try and expropriate all of these properties that are owned by corporate landlords. Someone asked Eoin Óibrín if that was something that Sinn Féin would be in favour of, and he just said no, it's not necessarily the answer. So, I mean, it doesn't seem to be anything that radical on the cards at the moment in terms of what they're presenting to the public in the area of housing.
Yeah, that radical, I suppose, is... And I think radical being the operative term, kind of like what you were saying earlier where, you know, I think that if you look at Sinn Féin and understand them for, you know, what they are, you know, a social democratic party.
Yeah.
You know, is something falling short of radical, though it's not necessarily still a good thing?
It could very well be better than what we have now. Yeah, absolutely. But it still wouldn't be great.
You know? I think so. Like some of these, it's hard to know like how serious some of these people are. You know, commentators and industry heads. Like it's almost like some of them think like that the fucking provos are just going to come in like and commandeer all these you know, institutional properties and just like take them off them. Do you know what I mean? Like, whereas like that's not going to happen. Like
that'd be class, though.
You know. You know, like that. It's just some of the stuff is hysterical. Like it's, you know, as if Sinn Féin is like a communist party or something. Whereas you've just, as you've just said, their policies and what they're proposing to do is not dissimilar to the policies of like the Social Democrats or.
And some of them are already being enacted. So like Fianna Fáil, Micheál Martin in his speech and the Ardesh said, we're going to expand on this tax credit for renters. I mean, that's something that Sinn Féin are also proposing, tax credit for renters. There are similarities between what's currently being done and what Sinn Féin is proposing. It's just Sinn Féin is like that bit more to the left. But as I said, like, doesn't strike me as particularly radical, you know. Still going to have a landlord class, still likely going to have corporate landlords. You just might have, say, a state developer, which actually would be very welcome, I'd say, you know.
So two other things, yeah, that came out and related to all this chatter about Fianna Fáil, who are they? Who are they there for? Who is Irish institutional property there for? Who's the country being run for? The National Youth Council of Ireland published a report this week that had some fairly stark findings about it. Was people aged 18 to 29. Not to, I don't want to come across like a wannabe youth whisperer here, you know, but like some would. But you know, people who said that, off the top of my head, you have about 35 to 40% of people in that age bracket have never left home, primarily because of financial constraints. One in five have skipped meals because of financial pressures. You have it was less than half are happy with their pay packets. Just less than half felt financially worse off right now than they did this time last year. Now this is, you know.
Have they not seen our GDP? GDP?
The GDP is going really good.
Did you get these graphs from Mark Henry?
Have they not seen our latest labour productivity?
This is the thing, like, where, you know, we're obviously, I'm not a graph man, but, you know, I mean, this was a, you know, study, National Youth Council of Ireland, the methodology as far as, you know, people who know data seems to be fairly sound. I don't see people taking any main gripes with it. While this report came out, there was another report in the Sunday Independent, because, you know, that thing of Chris Rock had he talked about conservatives in the US who would bitch and moan about advances in terms of LGBT rights and advances in terms of civil rights, where they would say, you know, we're losing. And Chris Rock said, if you're losing, who the fuck is winning? You know, now to flip that on its head a wee bit, you have this happening with young people. And then you also have, we do have some good news that there's been an increase of 200 extra ultra high net worth individuals, is what they call them. Basically people who are worth more than 20 million euros. So there are 200 extra of them in the country.
Yes.
Because like,
delighted.
But it is, but like, it's a repeat of the austerity years where, you know, this was back when, from the austerity years onwards and before them, you know, Oxfam do their annual report where they will report on the number of billionaires in the world, wealth inequality, all the rest. And invariably what happens is then you'll have commentators and political figures on the right will quibble with the findings of the Oxfam report, and they'll say, oh, there's this wrong with it, there's that wrong with it, they don't consider this kind of wealth, they do consider that kind
they
of
they haven't seen Mark Henry's tweets.
Yeah, they haven't seen Mark Henry's tweets, you know. Whereas, you know, this report, which was, it was Niamh Horan reporting on it in the Sunday Independent. This is, it's based on figures from revenue. So yeah, we got 200 extra.
Can I just say something? I have to be careful. I'm not going to say who was in the picture or where the picture was, but like there was a picture related to that story of certain people who have a lot of money. And I think I sent it onto the group. Like they just looked like these like fucking mafia figures. You know, there was whatever way the photo was done and the particular people who were in the photo was just like something from, you know, it was like something from The Godfather. I'm not going to say who they were, but yeah.
You can probably guess.
Yeah. We'll let people guess.
Yeah. But again, yeah, so this is, it's a repeat of the austerity years in that, you know, the wealth is still being created. It's still there. It's being transferred, you know, because during the austerity years you had, you know, it was like every year it was like, oh, fuck, like, things might be really bad for you now, but guess what? We've got a new billionaire. We've got a new billionaire, you know, in X, Y, and Z. It's still happening now. How do you address that, though? When you do have this wealth transfer and all of the data, Mark Henry is going through it as we speak, I'm sure, you know, would suggest that this is what's happening. People in younger generations are effectively transferring wealth to older ones.
Yeah. I mean, like a stark might be something like a wealth tax. Very, very straightforward. I mean, a lot of some of the difficulty with taxing these guys is that, you know, they're non-resident, they're not in the country. So, but another way of coming at it would be a wealth tax. They'll still have assets in this country, right? Something that Sinn Féin that is proposing would be a 1% tax on net assets over €1 million. It's, again, like, it's not that radical at all. It's perfectly reasonable, but it would be a huge yield for the state, and it would be a very mild disincentive to not hoard wealth in this way. That might be just one very straightforward way of doing it.
Just one.
I'd love if we started looking into historically how a lot of these characters made their money.
Only there was someone who looked into this kind of stuff.
I'm not convinced by the stories that were given about how a lot of these people...
They're self-made men.
Yeah, and that's it. Like, there's never any kind of interrogation of, well, how did this person make X amount of money by doing this little small thing? Do you know what I mean? And if you look at the connections, I know I'm kind of going down a rabbit hole here, but if you look at the connections that a lot of these people had, again, without naming names, like, you know, I don't think we've ever kind of gotten to the bottom of how a lot of these people made their money.
Yeah, it's like trying to actually prevent people being able to accumulate that amount of wealth in the first instance. Like, I even remember during the Bernie Sanders campaign, he was proposing stuff like, say, having a representative for workers on corporate boards, or there was talk of having CEO or like shareholders, that like what they can draw having to be proportionate to like what the person who's on the lowest wage is receiving. There's also very, very practical things that could be done on that level that Fine Gael don't seem to really have any interest in doing. So, you know, and it's all good anyway, looking at Mark Henry, so.
It's the fans' favourite take of the week, brought to you by Irish Institutional Property this week. Paulie, it's a piece by Dana Ehrlich, the Israeli ambassador to Ireland. Before we get into it, one question that was posed on Twitter was by Enda Fanning, actually, which I just thought was an interesting question.
Okay.
This happened after the Fine Gael Ardash, where Simon Harris said some good things, in fairness to him,
yeah,
about Israel's ongoing genocide in Gaza. Mm-hmm. And got the resultant coverage. And then next thing is Dan Ehrlich pops up with 1,000-odd words in the paper of record. And then the fanning just asked the question, how did this happen? And actually, like how did it happen? Because, look, to be binary about it, it's probably one of two things. It's either Dan Ehrlich gets on to the Irish Times or the Irish Times gets on to her. Equally plausible to me.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine that she would have been proactively, you know, approaching newspapers to try and get this put out. Maybe I should explain what it is. So, like, the thrust of the piece is that recognizing Palestine basically sends a message to Hamas that their tactics of terrorism are a legitimate form of political action and that they should continue them, right? The fact that it was published, I think, just shows a bias and shows, you know, that people in the media in this country are soft on the Israelis. I mean, have you ever seen anything like this published by, say, the Russian ambassador? I have not. So, you know, she's still got a platform to apologize for this genocide. So things aren't as, you know.
Is this going to be a weekly thing now that she has? Like, she's just going to write every week.
And, like, you know, like it does actually show, you know, to be clear, we wouldn't publish a piece by Yuri Filatov, the Russian ambassador, despite what some people might say.
No.
You know, but the Irish Times doing this, it does very much show, all right, well, this is what we consider acceptable. This is, well, we're all right with this.
When the Irish Times do it, it's mature.
Yeah. These are the adults in the room.
Yeah.
You know, and the piece is hitting all the, I suppose, all the hits, you know, criticizing Zionism is anti-Semitism.
That was, yeah, on that, she went beyond the International Holocaust Remembrance Association, their definition of anti-Semitism, a controversial definition that has caused a lot of debate across much of the West. It's been introduced in some organizations in some countries. It's been resisted elsewhere for some of what it gives as definitions of anti-Semitism, and there have been serious debates and serious concerns about what it would mean for freedom of expression.
Yeah.
Now, Dan Ehrlich seems to even go above and beyond the IHRA definition, where she actually says it's anti-Semitic to be anti-Zionist.
And also it's the she says that Zionism, it's the national identity of the Jewish people, and therefore it's illegitimate to criticize it. But, like, even if you were to take that face value, there's lots of national identities that people criticize all the time. If I were to come on here and make the case for greater Albania or greater Serbia, and you were to critique it, would anybody say that you were anti-Albanian or anti-Serb? Even in Irish nationalism, there's an ongoing debate within it and from people who aren't Irish nationalists about, you know, what the movement means, where it should go, and so forth. So national identities, nationalist movements, are all open to criticism. But she seems to think that it's her own one that's being singled out. But, I mean, that's clearly not the case. All you have to do is, like, look at the world around you.
I think it's anti-Semitic not to be Jewish. I think that's going to be her next take. If you're not Jewish, you're anti-Semitic.
Yeah, and, like, you know, Simon Harris did say some good things, you know, and fair play to him. But, I mean, he's committing to recognizing Palestine, which is something that actually passed through the Dáil and the Seanad 10 years ago, right? There's other things that the Irish government could be doing if they were serious about opposing the ongoing genocide that they're just not doing. One of them would be passing, for example, the Occupied Territories Bill, which would just be a ban on goods, services, and natural resources coming from illegal settlements. Really, really straightforward, right? Another one would be, you know, actually checking US planes that are going through our country for weapons that might be on their way to Israel, right? That'd be a step forward. If you really wanted to be serious about it, you could say, if you're an Irish citizen who travels to Israel and participates in this campaign, we're going to investigate you, right? Put forward the idea that you could actually be criminally prosecuted in this country for committing crimes against humanity.
Do you remember when your one Lisa Smith was the Irish, she's a former Irish soldier, wasn't she? And she was found to have gone off and joined ISIS.
Yeah.
I remember at the time, there was some like backbench TD who gave an interview saying, well, I think it should be illegal to go and join ISIS. Like, and this level of absurdity to it, you know, where it's now Gardaí going around having checkpoints going, you're not a member of ISIS. You're Islamic State, Daesh.
I think we should bring back, was it Section 31 of the Broadcasting Act? And just apply it to Dana Ehrlich. Just like, I don't think she should be allowed on TV or media. Just ban her completely. Can I just put it on the record that I think Dan Ehrlich is a fucking asshole? I kind of feel I need to say that.
Expelling the ambassador would be expelling her as well for being the Israeli ambassador, but also just for being an asshole would be a welcome step forward.
Yeah, I think
if mostly a symbolic one.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could, you know, with the support of other parties, you could draft something for the Dáil that includes the fact that she's an asshole.
Please God, we will. Guys, thanks so much for joining us for episode 6. From myself and the senior hurlers, we'll see you next week. Good luck.